All right, Paola, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We're talking about flies and maggots and crime scene investigation. So, flies and maggots looking for drugs in crime scenes, that's crazy. So, what to tell me about that? What's that all about?
Well, flies are often at the crime scene if we have the body of a person or even a carcass of an animal in the process of decomposition, because this is what happens in nature. We have a dead body, and the nature takes over and do the decomposition process, starting from the arrival of blowflies that lay eggs, and the eggs would hatch into little maggots. They would grow. Typical story of the little caterpillar, but in this case, it's a maggot eating the body, and then find a good space, a good place to become a pupa, that is basically a cocoon, and then after some time fly away as an adult fly. Now, in the process of the decomposition, they decompose the body and they eat the body. Now, if the body is dead because of natural causes, or maybe with a because of a murder with a knife or something like that, it's all good. But if the body has been poisoned, or there was a use of toxicological substances, drugs, use or abuse of drugs, well, the story is that you are what you eat. So the maggots will have in their own body the drugs, the poisons, and any other substances that you will find in the body.
And so forensic entomology, is this a new thing that's been around, or is this something that's been around for a little while?
Well, forensic entomology as a science is born, let's say, at the end of the 1800, because we consider the starting of a science when, for the first time, the scientific method has been used to investigate a certain issue, a certain question. The real thing is that flies were used way before in the context of the investigation. We have documents that talk about flies being used in the 13th century in China to have ideas about who did the murder of someone that was working in a rice field. The local agent of the law asked everyone to put the sickle, so this tool that is used to cut the rice, on the floor, and flies were quickly going to the sickle that was covered by blood. And so there was, well, the sickle was used to kill the person, so the person that owned the sickle is the murderer. Well, this could be the first case of the use of flies of forensic entomology, but probably also the use of forensic entomology and miscarriage of justice, because, well, if I was the murderer, I would probably exchange my sickle with someone else's sickles.
You always want to be cleaning your sickle after every day then, right? If that's going around. And
Absolutely.
so with our current methods of forensics, how do you, what's the process of, studying the flies and getting the evidence from them to then make an investigation from it?
So we have standards and guidelines that we had to follow when we find a body that is in the decomposition process, and we have flies, maggots, and different other insects, because it's not just about blowflies. And the idea is that you have to collect these samples of insects, trying to don't be biased on what you see. So don't collect what something that is bigger and better rather than something small, because what you see there will give you information despite what they look like. You may be thinking that the flies that are bigger, the maggots that are bigger, are older, so will give you information about a longer time. But you have different species, and the species can be big, even if they can be big, but they can be younger than other. They are smaller, but they are older. So it's basically the same situation of having chihuahuas and small dogs. A chihuahua stays a chihuahua even if it's older. Same story. We have chihuahua maggots. They are always small. So, like the little coffin flies, they are flies that are very tiny because they can enter into the coffins. They will always be small. Flesh flies are big, massive maggots, and they grow very fast, so they can be younger than the other ones. So you go there and you basically use spoons, plastic spoons that you buy at the supermarket as tool for a forensic entomologist, and you have containers. In the containers, you have this mix of different kind of insects. You will divide this sample in two. One will be fixed immediately at the scene with hot water and alcohol, ethanol, 70%. In this way, you stop their growth. You basically sacrifice them, and you can use the stage of life in which they are as time machine. And the other group, you can organize a breeding colony to get to the adulting star, the adult stage, because it's easier to understand which species, to identify the species from the adulting star rather than the immature. Or you can use these for other investigation. You can analyze them from the toxicology point of view, so put them in a gas chromatography mass spectrometry machine, or you can analyze them from the DNA point of view. DNA of the insects, so what insects do I have? Maybe I'm not an entomologist that can work into the morphology of the fly or of the maggot, but the DNA will give me information. Or the DNA of the stomach content to answer the question of what is the substrate on which the maggot growth. And I'm saying that because, well, you can stage a situation in which you have a maggot in something or on somebody, but the maggot actually comes from something else. That happened to me in cases of food stored products. Like you buy the maggots from the fish shop and you put the maggots in a roast chicken that you buy at the supermarket. And then you claim to the supermarket that you got a rotten chicken, you wanna be paid back, you're gonna call the press and things like that. Forensic entomology can analyze the DNA of the stomach content of the maggots and say, well, this was not grown on a chicken, it was grown on a fish. So there is something wrong here.
Wow, so there's so many things you can do. The potential investigative power of a maggot is really starting to astound me. So does it go beyond drugs and alcohol in the system? Is there anything weirder than drugs and alcohol investigation using maggots and flies?
Well, I just can tell you that one of my classes at Murdoch University is entitled 101 Things That You Can Do With a Maggot. And from the point of view, fun fact of analysis of maggots, well, you can identify the presence of GSR, so gunshot residues, in the maggot. So imagine a situation that you kill someone using a gun. And this gun, the shotgun, doesn't go through any bones, like not through the skull or anything. That if you find only bones, you will not find. So if I shoot to the skull, I will find the hole in the skull, so it will be pretty clear. But if the shotgun happened somewhere where there are no bones, well, I will not find anything. And if the bullet is not there, I have no idea what happened. But when you shoot someone, you will release the bullet and the gunshot residues. So the chemical residues that the gunshot leaves. They are very typical of the type of bullet because they can be with lead or can be leadless, and they can have specific amount of different chemicals and things like that. Now, maggots are present on the body and they prefer certain parts of the bodies. These parts of the bodies are the part that have high humidity and easy access to the internal part of the body, okay? So typically it's mouth, nose, eyes, ears, because they are mucosas, so they are very humid and they have access to the internal part of the body. But a wound, a shotgun wound, any kind of wound, can be exactly in the same situation. And the insects that are there, they start eating the flesh mixed with body fluids and mixed with whatever substance is there. So they will not choose, oh, flesh, yes, gunshot, not. Flesh, yes, gunshot, not. They will introduce the gunshot in the diet, pretty much as like caster sugar on your cake, okay? So if you analyze the maggot and you put that in a gas chromatography machine, you will see high spike of peaks that says in the meal, there was something that is out of the chart, that is lead, antimonium and barium, probably. That are the typical things that you can find in a gunshot residues. These elements are present in nature, so they will be present in a control situation, but when there are gunshot residues, they go spiking, boom, up in your charts. So this is not telling you there are gunshot residues there, but you can investigate a little bit better. And a better investigation can be using the scanning electron microscope and opening the stomach of the maggot, because gunshot residues are, yes, these three or more elements together, that you can see in the charts in the chromatography, but it's like having eggs, flour, and sugar. You don't have a cake. If you see the elements can be, well, simply three elements you have in the fridge to make a cake. You don't have the cake. But if you open the stomach of the maggot, you will see the three elements together, all melted because of the high temperature in the shogun. So you will see the cake of the residue. And it will tell you, yes, they are. The cake is there. The gunshot is there. And the gunshot has these elements. So it's probably lidless or it's lead, with lead or not. So they can be really, really powerful.
Wow. Wow. So yeah, almost anything that you introduce a maggot into and in an environment, you can see where it's been and what it's been eating, even if it's heavy elements like from a gunshot.
Yes. And one of the first time the entomotoxicology, that is this hybrid science between entomology, study of insects, and toxicology, study of toxins and toxicological substances, was used was actually about the presence of mercurium in the environment, so pollution. So the environment was polluted and the fish that was in that specific environment was decomposed by maggots, and the maggots had the pollution in their body. So from that, we just move to drugs, and we move to any kind of drugs that can be used or abused for causes of death.
Wow, that is fascinating. I just assumed, you know, maggots and flies could be used, you know, to tell time of death. I didn't expect for them to be able to be used to find what toxins were used to kill someone or whether someone had been shot or not. That's fantastic. I am enlightened.
And you know what? The other thing is that this analysis is very quick. So I had a case many years ago in which the body was found only as bones. So if you find only bones, it's very hard to tell to identify the body, unless you have some information a little bit more, like documents, some specific things, but then you have to go DNA or facial reconstruction. It requires a certain amount of time. And even the DNA from bones requires a few days, a couple of weeks, it depends on how much the case has a priority respect to other cases. The analysis of the toxicology of the maggots require a couple of hours because the machine has to work. That's it. In that case, we knew that in the place where the body was found, this place was not far from a rehab facility in which somebody disappeared a few months before. And we knew what kind of, drug intake was taking this person. So when we analyzed the maggots a couple of hours later, we knew already that the list of drugs was exactly the same list of this person that was disappeared. It's not a confirmation of identity, but it's a very good point for continuing the investigation to certain direction or others. Entomology or toxicology do not close a case. It's the combination of the different expertise that will make things happen. The different expertise kind of remove options. So kind of incanalate the energy and the funds and the time towards certain direction of the investigation rather than other.
Wow, that's fantastic. I wish I could speak to you more on this, but unfortunately I think we're out of time. So Paola, thank you so much for coming on and chatting to us about bugs and drugs and crime scenes. Thanks again. Yeah, great.
Thanks for having me.